Do you know where I come from?
We're from America.
United States. America.
Yeah. America.
Rick Steves is familiar to public television and radio audiences as the mild-mannered, good-natured guide to Europe through the back door. He spent 30 years steering American tourists toward good-value hotels, great art, and good cuisine. But there's an activist side to Rick Steves that may come as a surprise to many of his fans. Earlier this year, he produced an hour-long special on travel in Iran, not the kind of place the average American tourist thinks of spending spring break. Now, Steves has published a book called Travel as a Political Act. His goal, he says, is to get Americans to broaden their perspectives beyond the usual fun in the sun.
For instance, I was in Dubrovnik in Croatia. Dubrovnik was a human traffic jam of people off of their cruise ships, you know, shopping up and down the main street, just jamming that place, so excited that they could eat five meals a day and still snorkel when they get into port. And I thought, well, I hope they are getting more out of this experience than just a shopping excursion on the mainland in this touristy town, because the next day I went 2 hours inland to Bosnia, and I was in Mostar, talking with people who 15 years ago were killing each other right in the town. The main drag was the front line, literally. Parks, city parks 20 years ago, today are cemeteries filled with tombstones, all with the same date on them, 1993. Wow. And I was in that town, and I had the opportunity to do like all the tourists, go down to the river and see a nice picture of the floodlit bridge and have a nice, you know, dinner, or turn 180 degrees and go to the boulevard, that former front line. And I did that. I had dinner in a restaurant that just opened 2 months ago, the first restaurant to open on the former front line, and got to talk to the man about what's it like as their community knits itself back together. How is this next generation not going to kill and rape and ethnic cleanse each other? And it really was a powerful experience.
But that's what I want to explore a little bit, because I suspect that 10 years ago, had you gone there, you might have very well have spent all of your time down by the river, avoiding things like where the cemeteries are and what the recent political action was, because the show that you were doing was to attract people who didn't want to think about war. What changed?
Yeah, well, 9/11 changed me, I guess. Starting on 9/12, I realized that there's a problem here. We are 4% of this planet, and the other 96% is not going to go away. You know, we're outvoted in the United Nations routinely 140-4 on issues that matter to the desperately poor half of humanity, the half of the people on this planet who are trying to live on $2 a day. When we hear Ahmadinejad say something angry to us, it's pretty naive to think that he's talking to us. He is what we would call shoring up his political base. Who's his political base? Small town, less educated, frightened, fundamentalist Muslim parents who are motivated by the same thing that many Americans who are so adamantly against Iran are motivated by, fear and love. We've got to understand that. And when we do, all of a sudden, we have a chance to get together and humanize each other and realize politicians will come and go, but we're all just parents trying to raise our kids according to our values.
Yeah. You talk very confidently about that now. Did you know that that was what you were going to discover when you went to Iran?
No, I was afraid to go to Iran. I remember it was really interesting. Just almost exactly a year ago, we headed off with our public television film crew, and I came very close to leaving our big camera in Athens, thinking they'd be throwing rocks at us when they saw an American film crew on the streets of Tehran. And I thought we'd go in there with our little sneak camera. But we went in with our big camera, and thank goodness we did. I mean, I'll tell you, I've never been received so warmly and enthusiastically on the streets as an American. I began my journey in Tehran, the capital city of this perplexing nation. Tehran projected mixed messages. Murals denounced the USA and Israel as evil empires. Yet the people broke into smiles when they heard we were Americans.
I love you, America.
Now, people didn't like my president, and I don't like their president, you know, but that's beside the point. They were curious about me. They're very afraid that their kids, if they have a Western-oriented government, that their kids will become boy toys, you know, little sex toys and drug addicts and crass materialists. I had a woman actually cross the street to tell me we just don't want our children to be raised like Britney Spears. You know, they're victims of a lot of propaganda over there, and they're victims of their government's agenda that wants to demonize us, and we are victims of propaganda and our government's agenda. It's occurred to me that this is subversive stuff in my industry. Tourism is, along with armaments, the biggest industry on the planet. And nobody in the industry wants people to start traveling and thinking. On Friday, the mosques are filled with thousands of people praying in services that felt surprisingly similar to my church back home. Down by the river, families picnic, stroll along the grassy bank. Bridges were crowded with young people doing what seemed like a Persian paseo. It could almost be in Europe.
Are you at all afraid that what you've done is whitewash Iran?
Well, some people think I'm a Jane Fonda mouthpiece for Iran, the bad guys, or something like that. But that's why I'm doing this. I think what I'm doing is humanizing the planet. And I think it's a matter of good character to know people before you bomb them. For every bullet that flies and every bomb that drops, it has my name on it if it's coming from my country. And I take personal responsibility for that. And I'm not going to let the media tell me what the issues are. I want to go there and talk to people. I was just down in El Salvador. Wow, what an experience to go to El Salvador and talk to people who lost their war against United States interests. You find a memorial in the main park in the capital city of that country that is a perfect knockoff of our Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. Thousands of names chipped into that granite, that black granite stone, loved ones tenderly fingering the name of their dead loved one, and then realizing each one of those names is the name of a person who was killed by my country in
wow.
a war.
Well, and anybody who has ever been by the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. will have a visceral reaction to what you just said.
But, you know, that week I was supposed to go to Mazatlan with my wife and kids and lay on the beach. And I was invited to the 25th anniversary of the assassination of Archbishop Oscar Romero. And I told my wife, Ann, I'm just going to be no fun on the beach. I've got a curiosity for this. I've got a passion for people's struggles in Central America. I want to learn what's going on. You can have fun. Fun is great. That's part of travel. But you have the opportunity to better understand the reality on this planet and to realize that, you know, the fact that people are different is something not to be afraid of, but it's to celebrate. You know, I used to think everybody wanted to be like us. I thought everybody has the American dream. I thought the world was a pyramid with us on top and everybody else trying to figure it out. Then I traveled and I met people who had very smart, well-educated people who had nowhere near the freedom or the opportunity or the affluence that I enjoy, and they wouldn't trade passports. They were thankful. They had the Moroccan dream or the Bulgarian dream or the Norwegian dream or the Sri Lankan dream.
Do you have the impression when people tell you things like this that they know they are instructing you in a part of their culture that they believe you won't have understood?
Oh, yeah. I think people look at America and they just... they like America. They love American individuals. They like our personal casualness where we talk people by their first name and so on. But they also can't imagine how many people we lock up and that we have capital punishment and so on. I mean, the Europeans just can't believe how many people we have in jail. And what's interesting for me is they're dealing with the same struggles that we are. They've got immigrant labor problems. They've got homophobia. They've got racism. They've got a geriatric society where they won't be able to keep their cradle-to-grave welfare society going. They've also got serious drug problems. I've been outspoken on drug policy issues a lot in the last decade because I bring a European sensibility to the discussion in the United States in an area where a lot of people are afraid to talk about.
I want to talk about that for just a minute because I was impressed by a couple of the things you write about in Travel as a Political Act about drug policy in countries. Is it Switzerland where you related going into Starbucks one day?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was really amazing. I was at Starbucks in Zurich in Switzerland, went downstairs to the bathroom, and the whole thing was lit with blue lights. It was like some sort of it was just blue lights. And I thought, what's going on? And then I realized, oh, I can't see my veins. And the whole idea was I couldn't shoot up if I wanted to there. They didn't want junkies in their restrooms shooting up because there's a lot of needle addicts on the streets in Switzerland. They don't have more of them. They're just not in jail and they're still alive, you see, compared to our country. Yeah. And across the street from that Starbucks, there was a machine that used to sell cigarettes that's been retooled, and now it sells government-subsidized syringes. And I bought a couple. They're very cheap, and it's a fun souvenir. You know, when I talk about drug policy, A lot of people just say, oh, he's soft on drugs. But in Europe, it's not an issue of soft on drugs or hard on drugs. It's an issue of smart on drugs. It's a fascinating area to talk about, and I can talk about it because nobody can fire me. And I just feel like some people say, it's courageous to be talking about that. And I figure if it's courageous to be talking about looking at our drug policy, that in itself is reason to talk about it.
But as a travel agent, this must still concern you a little bit, because whether the drug problem is big or small, I've read about Amsterdam as a source, as a place you can go visit if you're really interested in drugs. It has to make you a little bit uncomfortable, doesn't it, to go into the areas of Amsterdam where drugs are freely available?
Well, I'm uncomfortable in places around Europe where they've got heroin maintenance clinics, because heroin addicts just look scary to me because of my cultural orientation. When it comes to marijuana, Europe looks at marijuana like a soft drug, like alcohol. It's not good for you, but if people want to do it, they're going to do it, and why make a big deal about it? Let's have our police doing something a little more constructive than running down pot smokers. And I've enjoyed for 20 years taking my groups in Amsterdam through the red light district and into the coffee shops. And it's just really odd to be checking your email with a bunch of people sucking on bongs, you know. And the big news these days is an Amsterdam coffee shop can lose its license if it allows tobacco smoking in there, because tobacco is no longer allowed indoors for the health of the employees. All this kind of stuff is fun to learn about. And I just bring it home because when I'm traveling, I want to know how other people live and how they deal with their problems. And it's all right down to the same thing. We're all caring, loving people who want our societies and our neighborhoods and our families to work, dealing with the same challenges.
So make a case for me. You're hardly a disinterested party. I understand that. But why is travel important?
Well, I mean, the famous phrase is living on this planet and never traveling is like having a good book and never turning the page. I never wanted to go to Europe until my parents dragged me to Europe when I was a kid. I got over there, and on day two, even as a little 14-year-old with a bad attitude, it occurred to me, this is not all that bad. There was different pop, different candy, statuesque women with hairy armpits. I mean, it was a wonderland. Okay, now I'm a full-grown adult, and I don't stare at statuesque women with hairy armpits, but I find the same wonder on this planet. And when I get a chance to sit on a rooftop in Turkey and watch a whirling dervish spin around and get into his meditative trance, his prayer, and to realize he's not just cruise ship entertainment. This guy is a monk. He's worshiping. He's got one foot planted in his community. His other foot goes around and around, acknowledging the wonderful variety in God's great creation. And then he has one arm going up to accept the love of his creator, and another arm going down like the spout of a teapot, he told me, showering God's love on all of his creation. He goes around and around, thankful for his community, acknowledging the variety in the planet, accepting God's love, and meditating on that. And I looked at him and I thought, man, he's different than me, but he's also fundamentally the same. And I thought that in itself is a very nice souvenir. So happy travel to you and all of your listeners.
Rick Steves is the author of 30 European guidebooks and the host of public television and radio travel shows. His hour-long special on Iran is just out on DVD, and he's just published a new book called Travel as a Political Act.